Last presentation of our session, and I think of the meetings, right? Some of Amanda's work is a nice segue into what I'm going to be talking about today, which is actually a very micro-level look at women who inject methamphetamine. There actually isn't very much known about this population, as some of you may know. I have no relationships to disclose. So just a little bit more about meth that might not have come up so far. Methamphetamine became a major public health concern in the 1990s due to the rapid spread of the drug throughout mainly several Western states, although we know it is moving east and south and everywhere else. As has already been mentioned, it is associated with high-risk sexual and injection behaviors and elevated HIV rates in some populations, such as men who have sex with men. With regard to treatment admissions, users represent an increasingly large proportion in some states. For example, in California, admissions increased 363% from 1992 to 2005. And the predominant routes of administration vary tremendously by state and even by city, so it's hard to get a handle on how many injection meth users there are and how many female injection meth users there are, where, you know, for example, in San Francisco, there's a rate possibly of about 40 to 50% of injection users, whereas in Vancouver, there's a rate of about 6%. So it's really hard to get a grasp of how many injection users there are. We have seen in some studies that have been done of meth users in treatment that injectors are faring more poorly than those who use meth in other ways, smoke it or snort it primarily. So, for example, in a study of 974 meth users in outpatient treatment in California, Hawaii, and Montana, the injectors looked much worse than the others in terms of the poorest treatment prognosis, poorer treatment engagement, greater drug use during treatment, lower completion rates, and greater psychological, medical, and drug use impairment before and after treatment. So for what we know at this point about women who inject meth, some of it might look familiar in terms of women who inject other drugs. And I think one of the questions out there is, if they are different, how are they different? How can we understand that? So meth-using female injectors, if you want these references, just let me know, are more likely than other meth-using women to have unprotected anal intercourse, multiple sexual partners, receptive syringe sharing, and sharing of syringes with more than one person. As most of you probably know, female injectors are more likely to have male injecting partners. With regard to meth, again, meth-using males may demand more uncommon and riskier sex acts of their female partners, perhaps due to the effects of meth on sexual behavior. And male meth users may have different physiologic reactions to meth than female users, which is a pretty underexplored area as well. So I'm going to be presenting some data from my study called the Women, Methamphetamine, and Sex Study, which is a NIDA-funded study. I'm an anthropologist, so this is a qualitative, very small scale, very in-depth study of women meth users. And one of my primary aims was to investigate the ways in which women users themselves relate their sexual experiences to their drug use and to their life experiences. So a very phenomenological, open-ended, person-centered interviews. And feel free to ask me about that at some point. So I would like to acknowledge NIDA's support of this study. The average age of my sample, which was 30 women, somehow that didn't get into one of my slides, but so this is a small study of 30 women, all of whom were in residential treatment for methamphetamine as their primary drug of choice. Average age, 28 and a half years. A little over half the sample is Latina, 30% white, 7% Native American, 7% mixed. You might notice that I did not have African American women in my sample, which actually does pretty much reflect the treatment-seeking sample in treatment-seeking population in Los Angeles, a very low population of African Americans seeking treatment for methamphetamine use in Los Angeles. A little over half had not finished high school, about a third had finished high school, and then some had taken some college courses, and all but one were unemployed and receiving public assistance. The one who was employed was actually a provider at one of the facilities where I did the interviews. And as I was leaving, she said, well, I want to do the interview too. And so that's how she ended up in the sample. most had never been married, which is a little different than some data that was presented the other day, where many of the women in a sample in San Diego had been married, and only about 13% had been married and 10% divorced or separated. All but one had children, and they were at an average age of 20 years when they had their first child. A little over a third were on probation or parole or both, and about two-thirds had used other drugs in addition to meth in the past year. So definitely a lot of polydrug use among women meth users, typically alcohol, marijuana, although other drugs were certainly present, including ecstasy, PCP, that kind of thing. And a little bit under half had been in other forms of residential treatment prior to the current facility, and some of them were court-mandated to treatment. 12 out of the 30 women that I interviewed described early childhood sexual abuse, and several of the women who did not report this said they definitely had not been abused. They made a point of saying that they had not had that experience. And 30% had at least one parent who was an addict, and I'll come back to this. Most of the women in my overall sample of 30 progressed from snorting to smoking. 6 out of the 30 had injected or were chronic IV drug users, and then there were an additional 4 who tried it once or twice and said they liked it so much that they could never do it again because they would become chronic injectors. So a total of 10 had used needles to some extent, with 6 using them more regularly. There is sort of a common lore among meth users, whether they're injecting or not, that injecting meth does have a very strong effect on your sexual experiences, to the extent that even just the act of injecting itself could result in an orgasm. And then there are other methods of administration, such as basting, which is injecting methamphetamine into the rectum with a turkey baster or other objects similar to that. Also using it that way, again, due to the heightened sexual effects of that route of administration. In terms of how these women were introduced to meth, most had already used other drugs before they started using meth. They were an average age of 15, kind of going back to this point about being very young users. Average age of 15 when they first started using, 2 started using when they were 9, 8 started using between the ages of 11 and 13. Most in the total sample of 30 were introduced to meth by family members or friends, but that changes a little bit with the injectors. So I'm going to talk about the 6 cases very briefly. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about these 6 women and then talk about some implications. So the first woman is 24 years old, a white woman, had not completed high school, never married. She was the only participant who didn't have children. She was on probation, also used alcohol, marijuana, and crack in the year prior to the interview. She started using meth at age 16. Both of her parents were addicts. She tried slamming meth at age 18 with a boyfriend and didn't like it, and then she slammed again with a different boyfriend after having 2 years clean because he said, let's have some wild sex, why don't you shoot up with me? And she said that meth gave her, quote, the courage to be a dirty person sexually, but she didn't find that injecting did actually end up enhancing her sexual experiences, although it did enhance her boyfriend's. Second woman, 25 years old, also white, had finished high school, never married, 2 children. She was on both probation and parole. She started using meth at the age of 16. Her mom was a heroin and a meth addict. And she said that her first experience with meth was slamming with her mom. She considered herself bisexual. She said she had both a wife and a fiance. And when I asked her about how she interprets, the role of meth in her life now, she said, it's not like I have a drug problem, it's like I have a life problem. The third woman, 21 years old, mixed white and Latina. She had finished high school, never married, had 4 children. She also used alcohol and marijuana in the past year. Started drinking at age 13 and using meth at age 15 with her boyfriend. She got pregnant at age 16 and used through the 8th month of her pregnancy, which was pretty common in my sample. She eventually started injecting with her boyfriend, and she said, I got into needles because that's what he did. I was scared of needles, but it didn't stop me. She shared needles with her boyfriend, and she said, I've never used condoms in my life, once or twice maybe. If he has anything, meaning an STD, and I get it, it doesn't matter. Then there was a 35-year-old white woman who also had not completed high school, divorced with one child on parole. She started using meth at age 12 with her uncle, not slamming with him at that time, but he was molesting her throughout her life till she was in her 20s. She slammed meth and later heroin, and plus she combined meth, heroin, and methadone. She preferred heroin over speed for its sexual effects, which is fairly unusual from what I understand. And she said, "I've slammed in a lot of off-the-wall places, and I'm not as sensitive as I used to be, not to mention half my brain cells are probably burnt out." The fifth woman injector is 23, white, hadn't finished high school, never married, had two children, also used alcohol, marijuana, and crack, and PCP. Both of her parents were addicted to meth. She started using at the age of 13, but she didn't like it. She went back to using it at age 16 with her boyfriend who slammed it. And she said, "I did it because he did it, then I started doing it on my own." She said, "Meth turns me into a freak. I'll do whatever," sexually, she means. She got involved in pornography and prostitution. She was the one woman in my sample who was actually a call girl. There were many who were involved in sex for drug exchange, but she was the only one who was actually making money off of her, off of providing sex. And she said, "When I was having sex for money, it was like an adrenaline rush for me." So actually, during that time of prostitution, she reflected that she did actually enjoy it in some ways, but she now looks back on it with shame. And she slammed quite a bit with her mother in the year prior to entering residential treatment. And the final case is a woman, 24 years old, Latina, finished high school, never married, had one child, also used alcohol, marijuana, and crack. She grew up in foster care from a very early age. She started using meth at age 15 and started injecting with her boyfriend in her early 20s. And coming back to this idea, "I was always scared of needles until my relationship with my baby's dad was slowly slipping away, and I wanted to know, what is it about using needles that he's pulling away from me?" She didn't tell her boyfriend for months that she was injecting. She was sort of testing out the waters before she told him that she could do it with him. And she didn't share needles until her, quote, addiction got deeper. She said, "I could only smoke for so long, then I needed to get a shot." She started getting into watching a lot of pornography, injecting meth during the actual act of having sex. She considered herself bisexual, but not because of drugs, and she said it does get you more aroused when you do shots. So another part of the common lore that I found among the women I interviewed and just being in these different treatment facilities is that there are a lot of ideas out there about people who inject meth. Whether you are one or you aren't one, there are a lot of thoughts about what that makes you in terms of what type of drug user you are, what kind of person you are. And this woman said, "When you use needles, like some people get real heavy into it and they lose themselves. That's why Slimers have a bad name." Slimers being meth injectors. So in summary, five out of these six women were introduced to injecting by their boyfriends or started injecting because their boyfriends were, and one woman was introduced to injecting meth by her mother. Several described high-risk sexual behaviors, unprotected, pretty much anything you can think of, they were doing it, and drug use behaviors, sharing needles. But they didn't use any form of protection against STDs, and needle sharing often started when addiction was at its peak. There was basically no use of condoms among all 30 of the women, except the one woman who was a call girl used them with her clients. No one reported being HIV, but several of the women had STDs. 25% of the overall sample of 30 had STDs, and then I took a look in the past couple days, and over two-thirds of the women injectors had STDs at the time of the interview. And many of these women reported continuing to use while they were pregnant, including the injectors. And that one woman who was trying to figure out what her boyfriend liked about injecting, she actually increased her injection use during pregnancy because she felt her boyfriend slipping away, and so she felt that the way to maintain her connection with him was to inject more frequently with him, just to have that time with him, which she felt was very intimate time. So there's a lot to look at. This was not, injection drug use was not the explicit purpose of my study, although it inevitably came up just by looking at women who use methamphetamine. So I'm still exploring a lot of these ideas and issues. I'm really interested in the perceptions of the impact of injecting on actual sexual pleasure, like this idea of instant orgasm upon injection. the appeal of injecting related to sexual pleasure, how those things are connected, and the role of peers in perpetuating perceptions about the relationship between the act of injecting and sexual experiences. Of course, the role of intimate relationship dynamics in the initiation and maintenance of injection, which lots of people have written a lot of good things about, interesting things about. The combined risk of unsafe injecting and unsafe sex in these dyads, and the introduction to drugs by parents and the use of drugs with parents, and the early age of initial meth use and polydrug use by adolescents. One more slide, just thinking about things that I'm discussing with some colleagues and just trying to work on myself. Getting back to this question of, are women who inject meth different than women who inject other drugs? And if so, why and in what ways? And what does that mean for us as people who will be trying to develop interventions for these women? Certainly that relationship between meth use and sexual behaviors is really critical to understand in what ways they might be different than other women injectors. There really isn't that much known about women who inject meth. For example, we need a better understanding of the relationship between meth use and heterosexual anal sex. That's been very underexplored, but seemingly it is very common, especially due to the heightened risk of STI and HIV transmission for unprotected anal sex. Of course, as an anthropologist, I'm interested in more ethnographic studies of risk environments in order to develop more comprehensive public health responses. And in summary, the public health implications of this connection between meth and sex and injection are considerable, with multiple risky behaviors being reported by all of the women in my sample. Thank you.
Well, thank the panel for five interesting and very informative presentations, and also that no one had to be wrestled off the podium. So we have time, we're running right on time for questions. Yes. Work is being done.
then I think hopefully there's just more interest being put on the impact of theft on sexual behaviors. But some other folks in the room are doing really interesting work up in San Francisco too on this topic. So, you know, it's hard to say. I really doubt the effects are different, although what was interesting in interviewing some of the older women is that they recalled so-called batches of meth from earlier in their use, from when they were younger, that were supposedly much better for sex than batches that are coming out now. So that's a whole other intriguing thing to look at, is how the actual chemical composition of meth has changed and how different batches seem to affect sexual experiences differently.
I like that question. I'm actually a little surprised at your answer. And because I like the way you're going, that the effects aren't in the drug, but they seem to be learned. Because going way back 30 years or so, I don't recall hearing talk about sex with shooting speed. It was not among heterosexuals, at least. I think it's interesting. But yeah, the track you're on, I find really interesting. What are their stories about it? What do they tell one another? Anyway, yeah, next question. Better question.
I don't actually have a question, but there are reflections which I have. There are two things which struck me. The first is the experiment or the research on availability of syringes, you know, which is similar to condom use and sexuality, you know, as a method of preventing HIV. Is it that faced with the problem of HIV and drug use, it's now okay to use drugs, and that's why we want to see if we give sterile syringes to the drug users, it will prevent HIV? It's a question. I mean, it's just some kind of reflection that's coming to my mind. The second one has to do with drug use and sexual arousal. The last presentation clearly shows that most of these women, they start early, 15, 14, and sometimes it's even their parents who initiate them. And then to be able to get, or to be able to enhance their sexual arousal, they're forced to use methamphetamine, which is quite dangerous to help. Now, when you start early, you don't really know your body, you don't know how to explore the sexual act, which in some people is an art, and which has a certain number of stages, you know, if you read some books on sexology and so on. So I begin to wonder, you know, the sociocultural implications of the use of drugs and sexual arousal, and whether, as a corollary, we shouldn't teach the sexual act to people so that people know how to use these to advantage rather than resort to using drugs, you know, for better sexual arousal.
So anybody want to react?
I'll try the syringe question. There's been a lot of public debate about whether making plain syringes available is going to increase injecting drug use, because people will, the idea is that if potential drug users know that they get access to clean syringes, they won't be afraid of AIDS, and they will therefore start injecting drugs more frequently, or they'll continue a longer period of time. That has been possibly the strongest argument against syringe exchange, not only in North America, but throughout the world as a whole. It turns out to be completely false, that if you look at the spread of injecting drug use over the last 15, 20 years in the world, it has spread in areas where clean syringes are not readily available, such as Eastern Europe and Asia. And that you also find that where clean syringes are available, you do not see any increase. I mean, we've been looking at that in New York, where we have a lot of non-injecting drug users, people who sniff heroin in particular. We have that massive expansion of syringe exchange programs, but the ratio of non-injecting drug users to injecting drug users has stayed constant over that time period. So we basically flooded the city with clean needles, but the people who were sniffing heroin did not go on to injecting, even though clean needles were available. So this, I think, really raises an important question of much policy is made on the basis of misunderstanding relationships between clean needles, injecting drug use, and HIV, that there are these common myths in the population as a whole that often determine the policy decisions. And how do we go to educate the public as a whole that this common intuition that clean needles are going to lead to more injection is not true, so that we can get policy based on actual scientific information rather than these myths about injecting drug use. And that really seems to be a difficult challenge, to get the general population to accept science over their sort of common sense intuitive understanding of drug use.
Well, with regard to the point about the relationship between drug use and sexual arousal and sex education, if I can extrapolate from what you said to that point, I think it's important to note that at least for the women that I've interviewed and that I've worked with, they're not initially using them for sexual effects. They're using their large part to lose weight, to party, to hang out with their friends. They're not even necessarily having sex at that point, although, you know, many of them are. They're getting pregnant at very young ages. But I mean, that speaks to larger policy issues in my mind about what do we teach adolescents about sex anyway. You know, they're certainly not being told how to have pleasurable sex. They're not even being told that they're not even being acknowledged as sexual beings, but I can go on. You know, well, so much about that. But I mean, it's a radical idea to teach people, you know, what encompassed in sexual acts in order to enhance pleasure. But, you know, certainly that would be a very radical shift for America to take that on as something to address with young teens. And it's also important to note that, yes, the women in my sample were using from very young ages, and no one ever knew, except their friends and maybe their parents, if they were using with their parents, but they were using in school, on their desks. So there's really not the detection, at least in the schools where these women might have been going, is not happening at all, much less any acknowledgement of what impact it might be having on their behaviors and their social networks. So there's a lot of work.
Yes, the woman in the sweater. Gentleman back here.
Gentleman from New York, when you said that you flooded the market basically with clean needles, did you see an increase in complaint around used syringes or any kind of nothing along those lines? Did that seem to be the main barrier as well? So
yeah, no, we did not. In part because this is syringe exchange and a great percentage of syringes are coming back to the exchanges and being safely disposed of. But we've also done increased pharmacy sales since we changed the law in 2001 that Connor was talking about. But we really do not see a lot of discarded syringes.
I work at a needle exchange site in San Francisco, and
most common response is that they break off the needle so that you're not likely to puncture yourself. They break off the needle and they throw it in the trash. And sometimes that's in puncture-proof containers like a used Coke can or something like that. Other times it's in a plastic bottle with the top screwed on. But sometimes it's also just thrown in the trash. And we really just do not see indicators of people getting accidental needle sticks, but they're not throwing them in the parks or on the sidewalks and such. They are, putting them in the trash, but they're not visible.
We have time for one last question. I want to thank the panel and thank all of you for attending.
What I want to do is run off the laptop.
Uh-huh. On your laptop?
Yes, please. So I'm on.
You don't want to record the presentation?
No, that's fine. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we've got a demo or something.
Oh, they got a switch on.
Cool. Well, what I did was I ran this line into the computer.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll fix that for you.
All right, thanks.